Greetings and welcome to Leaning Into Light's free recording for the month of August 2018. My name is Jessica Rios and I'm the founder of Leaning Into Light, a lifelong writer of letters and now a blogger and a mother and a coach and all kinds of things that I enjoy and sometimes things that I don't because I'm having a human experience just like you. Welcome to this recording. I'm going to share today from my own experience and voice because 3 weeks ago, I got back from Sweden, living in Sweden for 13 months in Göteborg, southern Sweden in Gothenburg. My husband is from there. Our daughter is 5, and when she was born, we said that we would move to Sweden for at least a year when before she turned 5. So off we went. And I wanted to share some of the highlights with you. I have been in a rather raw state of, you know, first jet lag and then some reverse culture shock. And I just wanted to capture in a recording some of the key thoughts and feelings I've been having since I got back and how it was for me to be there. And I'm sharing this from my perspective, not from the perspective of my family or my daughter or anything like that. Just from me for the sake of those of you who find it interesting that, you know, find the experience of living abroad for a year interesting, who are interested in Scandinavia, who want to hear about the personal story of somebody like me who just got back. So thanks for joining, and I will begin. So this is, I'm calling this conversation or this chat share humane and heartbreaking. And I'll start with, you know, the beginning. So basically it took me 6 months of project management and working with my husband and our families to get us launched and out of California over to Sweden. So 6 months of planning, and we were on a plane and we got over there and we were jet lagged for a while, and we put our stuff, some of our things, on a ship to bring with us to have some material belongings that we thought would be helpful over there. But most of our stuff went into storage. And so it was quite a radical experience of project management and preparation. So we were off and we arrived, and I had come with I don't know if it was, I was naive. I think I was naive, but I went with this gloss over my eyes about Sweden. So a lot of people I know feel this way about Sweden. It's just, let's be frank, Scandinavia has some really strong qualities. I'll just say this. I kind of went with this gloss thinking that, you know, Elsa Besko, the famous children's book illustrator from Sweden, you know, the mushrooms and fairies and cranberries and all this sort of charming mossy forest and peaceful way of Scandinavia was what I was going to find, that generally was going to be the flavor. And lo and behold, Sweden is part of the world of humanity, and there are some heartbreaking elements. So, yes, there was trash on the streets sometimes. You know, it wasn't immaculate. That was kind of surprising to me. I thought it would just be that they had that all figured out. yes, hilarious. There were cigarette butts, you know, actually a lot more cigarette butts than you find in a lot of places I go to in California, just kind of thrown on the ground. I don't understand that. Why would intelligent people, and aren't Swedes like intelligent people, why would people throw garbage on the ground for somebody else to pick up, like your garbage? I don't understand. So there was that. And the bigger heartbreak, I'm not going to go into some of my heartbreak around the early childhood dynamic there because it's pretty intricate stuff and it would require a longer and sort of an entire talk from me, and I don't want to do that now. But there was heartbreak around the refugees that I saw. Outside of every grocery market, you see usually a woman sitting on some kind of fabrics or something, even when it's freezing, except when it gets below freezing. It's like if it's below freezing, they don't sit there. But every other day, they sit out there and they're asking for money. And it's refugees. I don't know all the dynamics of how they live and where they live, often in their cars, and why they don't have better care, so they need to ask for money like that, or they choose to. But it was heartbreaking. I've been, I was born in San Francisco, and I've seen San Francisco and a lot of people beg. California, lots of places have a lot of mental illness, homelessness, really, really sad living conditions that just aren't necessary. This planet has enough for everyone. We just haven't risen to the occasion to figure out how to share it. And that's complex, right? And complicated. But I was surprised about that in Sweden. And so I did have moments of heartbreak. I had heartbreak around my daughter's, you know, preschool, looking for a preschool for her. I had heartbreak around the refugee situation, around the fact that, darn it, there's trash here too. And people throw their cigarette butts on the ground here too. I didn't, oh my gosh. So that was, you know, heartbreak, some of which is just kind of real and beautiful in a crazy way. And then some of which came from being naive. So I'll admit that. Overall though, and that's why I call this share humane and heartbreaking, Sweden is a much more humane place than America, the USA, that is. And I was very touched by what I noticed in the culture due to the humanity and the practices of Sweden. And let me say this, I didn't know, history is not my thing. I don't follow history. I don't track it. I love that some people do. But Sweden hasn't been this humane forever. You know, it has been much less humane and ethical and much more aggressive or, you know, unkind in the past. But at this present point in the human experiment, Sweden has a very humane way about it. And by that, I mean that people are taken care of there. So just to go through some of what that, you know, looks like medically. So everyone, all citizens have medical coverage. Yes, they're taxed more than we are in America, and I never heard one person complain about that. I never saw any sign that being taxed at a higher rate. So you have medical coverage, free education, good parental leave, great public transportation, and all of that. Was a problem for anyone? Taxed them at all? No, bad choice of words. I never saw any signs that it was a problem for anyone, that it meant they couldn't live comfortably. People there live comfortably. They live fine. There was no complaint about that. Yet in America, I hear people saying, oh, they're just taxed really high. Nothing's free. No, but what Sweden does for people is it claims, it puts a stake in the ground around people should have their medical needs met, not be living in fear that they might not have help if they break their arm. People should have education, because don't we want people to get smarter so we can have a better society? Mothers should be allowed to leave their work and go back to it once their child is not a baby anymore. And fathers should get time off too. In Sweden, mothers get 48 weeks paid at 80% of their salary. They get paid to be off with their new baby 48 weeks. That's almost a year. It's 11 months. And then the father gets 6 months off, paid 80%. And when they go back, their jobs are there for them. That's how it works. And it works. Companies know that's what happens, and they deal with it, and that's how it works. So I know we kind of drool about that over here because we have a very different reality. Art and the theater and the libraries are all covered over there. So their libraries are extraordinary, which, you know, those are places of learning and exploration and discovering the world. And I found that children and people over in Sweden were just generally much more informed about global perspectives. And my daughter, Helena, became more of a world citizen, it seemed like, at that point, in terms of her understanding that she is part of a global population and that they're different countries. And Mama, you know, on the train, why does that person have really dark skin? In the first few weeks we were there, she would see people that looked different than who she had seen a lot before. And I got to explain to her, oh, because their ancestors come from a part of the world where people have darker skin and, you know, there's more sun in that part of the world or whatever it was. And that was fascinating, that global sort of perspective. So on that note, public transportation, you know, I see that as an issue of being humane. It's a much more pleasant, much more intelligent way to move people around to have a smart system of buses, trams, trains, ferries to get people around. It's much smarter. And that is the most dramatic difference that I've experienced coming back to America. So I'll get back to that a little bit later. But, you know, it's sort of like it's a human right in one sense. No, not like food and clean water and love, but, and shelter. But, you know, public transportation, if you could do it, why not, right? It's like, what a wonderful way to get around. You just carry your bag. You don't have to worry about parking, finding a parking space. You don't clutter up the streets with cars. You're not sitting in a car. You're getting to experience people. The trains and buses there and the ferries are clean. They're well cared for. It's a priority. That was wonderful. On the note of, war, refugees are welcome. Sweden has one of the most generous immigration policies for refugees in the world. And they, in Scandinavia for sure, they are the ones that have upheld their refugee policy entirely, their agreement to that part of the world. So, you know, come on. If you were in a country that was at war and you are actually in your bones fearing for your life, for your parents' life, you don't know if a bomb's going to fall and your mom's body's going to be ripped into pieces right before your eyes or yours right before hers. You know, should you be invited to go somewhere safe? I don't know. Come on, that's the fundamental question. I don't know any, there is no good reason why not. Now, I know it's complex. I know societally we have rules and norms and systems that can get disrupted by increases in population and all that. But fundamentally speaking, people deserve, every single person on earth deserves a safe place to live. So knowing I was living in a country where people were coming, many people were coming from places where they weren't safe and the doors were open to come to this country. And often that the case was that my country was a strong, if not the central, you know, perpetrator, a player in the role of causing that war. It was heartbreaking to me on so many levels to be in the presence of that and really healthy in the way that, humans are quite a mess, you know. We're amazingly beautiful and we're also quite a mess. And to know that that there was that safe place for people to come from Syria, from Somalia, and that my country played a significant role in creating the danger and the horrific realities in so many parts of the world. Wow, that was a trip. That was a big and very intense experience for me over there. And finally, on the note of being humane, the working conditions in Sweden are much better for people working. So people get paid, I'd say, about the same. There's not the same kind of gap between the rich and poor there by any means. It's much different there in that regard. And people, you know, my husband was one of them, you know, working conditions wise. He said that where he worked, which was at the Opera House in Gothenburg, you know, they would put 8 people on a job to take care of something on the stage where he worked, one of the world's, you know, renowned opera houses. And back home at the company he worked for previously, they would have put 2 people on a similar job. So the amount of stress and pressure and taxing put on people, you know, back here in America at work is just quite incomparable to how things are in Sweden. And I noticed, you know, another, and that's just one example, but it seemed to be that way, generally speaking there, that work was work and they didn't expect you to make work your life over there. Many more things are closed on Sunday or Monday, or people would leave for lunch and close their doors. Nobody would freak out about it. It was just, well, that's a person too running that business. So yeah, they got to leave for lunch. And I also found this really interesting, you know, the way that it stood out actually was after I had been there about 11 months in May, I went to Scotland to visit a place that I, that's really special to me and get away for 5 days and do some writing. And when I got to London, when I flew into London, all of a sudden, at the cafe I went to in London and the, you know, immigration officer and our passport control, you know, attendant, people were grumpy. I just noticed the grumpiness and, you know, maybe that's London, but it struck me that back in America, I experienced that, you know, on a relatively normal basis, that people are grumpy at work. They don't really want to be there, but they're there because they got to pay the bills and that's what they're doing to pay the bills. In Sweden, I can't think of one example of when I experienced somebody being grumpy at work. Now, they're not super warm. They're not Latin blooded and reaching out and touching you and, you know, in that way, which, oh my gosh, I sure wished they were at some points. However, they were just generally, here I am at work. I'm getting paid a decent wage. I'm doing my job and I'm, you know, and here I am. It was just a different kind of feeling people seem to have about being at work and about the basic kind of civility of their personality and treating customers as they would come in. It was not customer knows best, customer is always right. Absolutely not. It was just, yeah, different working conditions, more humane. So in all those ways, I take this moment, before the last part of my talk, before I turn to that, I want to take this moment to give thanks again to Sweden, to the people who shape that place, to the fact that there's not money in politics in Sweden, just normal people, like your average people, are in political office over there. Yes, they have a royal family. That's kind of a different story. But generally speaking, you don't see the kind of corruption over there that you see here. Now, things are becoming more globalized every day. Things are changing. However, overall, the beautiful way of taking care of people that I saw in Sweden is a way that I would love to see mimicked more in the world. And I am grateful that I got to experience that firsthand. So coming back home, you know, reverse culture shock set in. I had never really thought of the term before, but I definitely had some reverse culture shock. There was jet lag and just the rawness of not just having been abroad, but having been abroad for 13 months, absorbing that culture, so much of its mannerisms into my ways, reflecting on its personality versus, you know, the personality of my own country, which is the USA, and going through heartbreak, going through the winter there, which was one of the biggest parts of my adventure. It was basically 7-8 months of winter. That's a whole different talk. I was very considerably challenged by that. I was more pale, I think, than I was coming out of my mother's womb. It was, wow, that was intense. But reverse culture shock. So here are some of the things that struck me in the last 3 weeks since we flew back. Here are some of the things that were the strongest. Pieces of reverse culture shock. So the first one, and this remains really intense for me, is car culture. America is designed for cars. Okay, so perhaps for you that's not anything new, but it's different when you've been living for 13 months in a place that is not designed for cars. You see how intelligent that is, how well people move, how good it is for people's bodies to be walking more, to be mixing together on the streets, to not have the streets filled with cars. The bike lanes and the walking lanes there are just as big as the car lanes, and they're totally separate because those two don't belong next to each other. And it works so beautifully. And to come back here and to be, you know, we landed in Oakland, San Francisco Airport, and suddenly the freeways have 4 or 5 lanes. You never see that in Sweden. That doesn't exist there. And there are just cars all over. So much of our, what we see, where we're sitting, what we feel is related to cars. And that's totally not cool. That's totally not a healthy way to live. It's not healthy for the planet. It's not healthy for us. It's very unintelligent. And yet it's complex, right? So that's that. But I'm struck by that. I'm also struck by the speed of America. And that's just where I am, you know, San Francisco Bay Area, Sonoma County. It's a slower pace for sure than the inner Bay Area, but it's kind of wine country, and yet it's speedy. People are rushing around more here, and I noticed that because I got wired to be over there more in my natural state, which is in terms of pace of moving through life, and that is a slower pace that feels more livable. So that's been a bit of a shock. The bigger, you know, the kind of biggest piece of reverse culture shock that's not so visible as cars or the speed of people rushing around is the fear that lies in the belly of America. All over California, even though I love being from this marvelous state, I can feel fear here in a different way. Over in Sweden, I would hear or see on Facebook about the shootings in the schools and things that were happening. You know, that just doesn't happen there. Shootings happen on occasion over there, but you have to go through a 3-day intensive training and analysis to obtain a gun. It's just a very different culture designed not so much around fear. You know, people aren't afraid that they won't have medical coverage. People aren't afraid that they're going to get sued if somebody trips and falls in their restaurant on a rug, you know, because you don't need to blame somebody else for your fall. You can go get help at a hospital. You know, it's paid for. Don't worry about it. You don't need to sue somebody else. That's really big. So the fear that we breathe in this, cultures, you know, real different in that regard. And, you know, guns and yeah, violence, fear, it all part of the same thought stream, right? And here's one example of how the fear stuff, well, I think the moment that it struck me the strongest. So we were back for, I think about 2 or 3 days. So really raw, right? Really raw, still jet lagged, all that. And we went with my mom. So this is me, my husband, and our daughter, who's 5, and my mom, who has been amazingly supportive in receiving us upon return. And we went into a coffee shop in her town, which is the county seat of a county that's wealthy. And she's not wealthy financially, although she's an incredibly rich person in heart and soul. But, you know, she's fine. She's comfortable, but she's not wealthy, but the county's wealthy. And so we get this, we're in this coffee shop and it's super hip and like gorgeous. The man's American, but he's got some Scandinavian blood. The woman is, I think, also American, but she might actually be, she's Japanese in blood, in ethnicity, but she might have moved to America from Japan. In any case, their decor is a blend of Scandinavia and Japanese, and it's just this gorgeous, appealing to me, maybe, you know, not to everyone. Beautiful place with wool couches and, you know, like hammock chairs, really sparsely, minimalistically designed and clean and healthy and beautiful. And the entire back half of this cafe is a glass walled with beautiful wood pillars. Playground, an indoor playground with like AstroTurf. So yeah, kind of corny on that, in that regard, but you know, you can't really grow grass inside without natural light. In any case, beautiful play structure, hand built with wood and, you know, totally original. And I was like, wow, that is so cool. Oh, America, you're so innovative and like how fun, you know? And then I got closer to the wall and there's a sign on the door that says, $15 per child for 2 hours. And I thought, God, you know, my mom was reacting, you know, in the sense that her clients who are underserved, low income pregnant women, they could never afford to take their child into that play area. So she was annoyed about that. And I just felt brokenhearted and I didn't know, like, wait, what? And I'm thinking, what a contrast, because in Sweden, okay, first of all, the playgrounds are awesome. There are no two playgrounds alike in Sweden. They don't all buy from the same manufacturer who's gotten all the lawsuit stuff, you know, approved and no kid can ever get hurt on this playground type of thing. You know, they're all original. They all have some element of danger because life is danger and kids need to learn that, right? It's like they could fall from 10 feet up and, well, then they fall. And many, many beautiful playgrounds. And here I was where you had to pay to get into a playground. And I thought, what the, you know, what is this? And so I was really upset. And after the we had coffee and wonderful pastries, and we got up and my husband and I were chatting with the owner and giving him our feedback, and he was very open, and he said, you know, I was saying, you know, I was bothered by the playground, you know, fee that you have to pay to go in there. It's really sad. And it's sad because we just came from Sweden where playgrounds are all over and they're wonderful and you definitely don't pay to go to any of them. And he explained to me that, you know, he has to. I was actually in tears. I was actually so brokenhearted, so raw about the contrast, the really severe, heartbreaking contrast between those two things. And he explained to me that, you know, he couldn't do it without charging people, that the insurance he has to pay is such that he has to charge people. He can't pay for that out of his pocket. And I get that. I've owned a few businesses. I get that. Okay. And it's still heartbreaking that a child should have to pay, that a parent should have to pay for a child to go in and play because of the insurance, because if somebody gets hurt, XYZ. So that's one of the pieces that that really struck me with reverse culture shock. And, you know, and onward. But today I just started to feel like, wow, I'm not in really culture shock anymore. We're back and I want to share. And so I put some thoughts down on paper to share with you. And I want to close with a couple thoughts. So why did I come back? I, you know, I still put Sweden on a little bit of a pedestal, which I don't really want to do in life in general, but I do admire that it has some really beautiful ways about it. And my daughter's half Swedish, so how can I not be enamored with it in that way? But why did I come back? Some people have asked, really, you're coming back, you know, when we were over there. And, you know, quality of life is better over there. And that can be said, that can be argued. However, if you can make it through the winter. However, I'm back because there are so many beautiful things about America. It's a gorgeous geography. This country, this continent is spectacular in its natural beauty. California is an amazing state. There are so many wonderful people all over this country. People who speak up, people who care, people who are trying to make our country have a more positive impact in the world. And when it gets down to it, my people are here. I feel so at home here. I love the warmth and affection of so many, you know, Californians, people who are willing to talk with strangers and smile on the sidewalk. I love that about where I live. And I want to be with people who are invested in me and who I'm invested in. And gosh, it takes a long time to build those relationships. So I came back for the people. That's the answer. And while I was there, I want to share that I did do a lot of, I did spend a lot of moments that felt like forgiveness, where my heart was healing from the anger that I've felt about many of our country's ways. So much of how things are arranged in this country is broken, and I can only do my part, and I've tried to fix it for so many years in so many ways. And I just softened a bit into more forgiveness, into more compassion for the wounds. I see America as like a 12-year-old boy who's deeply wounded. And when I think about that, I actually get emotional because that could be my son. And if my 12-year-old son was deeply wounded, I wouldn't want hatred or anger added to that. I would want compassion and forgiveness, and I would want him to have support to be, you know, to feel whole again. And that's what I wish for America, and I'm doing my part here to, you know, to put a positive imprint on it. My commitment is to live a truthful life full of courage, led from love. I am far from perfect in that regard. I'm just doing my best, and these monthly recordings for Leaning Into Light are one way that I give to help me feel that I'm having that positive impact in the world. Usually I record other people, I interview other people, and sometimes I record on my own. So this month, this is the share about my trip to Sweden, the adventure, the humanity, the reverse culture shock, why I came back, and some of the deeper ongoings while there and processes. Thank you so much for listening. You can come back every month to hear a new free recording conversation at leaningintolight.com. You are loved, and I hope you have a great day.